If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I created the perfect soldier. God, forgive me. Part 1. Both the best and worst kept secret of the generation is that the technology of the United States military is so much more advanced than what is available to the public. It's the worst kept secret because everyone knows it. No one is walking around thinking that they could buy all the parts of a B-2 and have it run with the efficiency and accuracy of the US Air Force. However, it's the best kept secret because people don't understand just how advanced their technology really is. Hell, even I don't fully know the lengths of their advancements. I've only been a part of a handful of programs, all dealing in the same realm of research. But what I have seen is unbelievable. Officially, none of what you're about to hear is true. To be honest, officially, might no longer exist. I know for a fact that I won't soon. They will scrub my name from every website, book, and research paper I'm mentioned in. Perhaps this story will be scrubbed as well. Or maybe it won't. Perhaps they'll leave it as some kind of controlled opposition. Make the world think what I'm saying is just a fictional story or a wild conspiracy theory cooked up by a tinfoil hat-wearing idiot. But it isn't. This is real, and it has to be stopped. My name is Dr. Daniel Hall. And for nearly 20 years, I have conducted research on biological enhancement for the United States Department of Defense. Before they approached me, I worked at a pharmaceutical company in the early to mid-2000s, studying the applications of CRISPR technology in the development of cures for viral and bacteria infections. I was in my early 20s then. I was academically gifted, and had a special interest in genome-altering technology. Most people who have heard of CRISPR technology believe that it's only a recent development, but the technology has existed in the public eye since the late 80s. Research with the pharmaceutical company was going well, and progress was being made quickly. I was proud of my work. I wished to create change in the world. I wanted to do something as an honor to those who propped me up in this position I was in, to those I could no longer thank. Then one day, without warning, I was fired and sent home. I was understandably upset. We had come so far in the study. I had done so much for the company, and yet, suddenly, I was let go without reason. I drank heavily that night. I usually didn't drink, but it was the only thing that kept my mind from racing all night. I questioned what it was that I had done wrong to be discarded like trash. I was woken up the next morning with a splitting headache and the sound of knocking coming from my door. Opening it, I saw a well-dressed man with a stack of papers smiling at me. The recruiter told me he was sorry about my recent unemployment. He told me that my work had been observed, and that it was foolish of the company to fire one of their best researchers. It didn't take much to put together the absurdity of the recruiter showing up on my door the day after I was fired. I wondered if this was all planned as some strange, under-the-table trade of employees between companies. I asked him who it was he was representing, and he informed me that he was part of a private research firm that has its projects contracted to it by the government. He told me that this agency believed I would be a perfect fit to be a part of their team. I asked him what I would be doing, but I was told that I couldn't know that information yet, but that they needed someone with my expertise. I was told the pay, and my heart skipped a beat. I was already doing pretty well, but what they were offering felt absurd. I was also told the resources at the agency's disposal were vast, and that I would never have to worry about the monetary issue of reaching project goals. It's strange to say it now, all these years later after everything that happened, but I was excited. I loved my work. The feeling of creating something new through the manipulation of something's very structure made me feel powerful. Now I was being offered a virtually endless budget to do just that. It seemed too good to be true. The only catch, I was told, was having to move my work to a new facility. This was a non-issue for me. I had no one to stay for. The screening process was long, interview after interview, dozens of contracts that essentially made my life forfeit if I was to so much as breathe a word about whatever it was that I would be doing. Turns out, even though the man who initially reached out to me said the agency was separate from the government, that was all a lie. The company exists separate from the government while being completely controlled by it. Something about adhering to government ethics and having the company as a scapegoat if need be. That was the other thing. The further I got, the more I was informed my work would be morally gray. I was reassured that our work, which some might find questionable, was already headed with the best intentions. I should have expected it to be lies, but I was a promising young man who had bought into the adventure of it. With each interview, my mind soared with all the possibilities of what I might be working on. After a while, with the stroke of a pen, I had the job. I was moved to a facility nestled deep in the Appalachian Mountains near a small town, and placed in a group that those in the know jokingly referred to as War Crime Division. In a post-9/11 world, America was focused on two things: finding the most efficient ways to kill the bad guys, and protecting its citizens, ethically or otherwise. I was put with a group of other researchers tasked with altering viruses to be studied in terms of researching biological weapons, both preventatives and development. We were told this was to be done using what was at the time state-of-the-art gene-altering technology. Even with the technology, however, this was no easy feat. The DoD wanted something new. Something that would be quickly fatal, but with an easy but convoluted cure on hand in case something got out of control. I don't even think they understood what they were asking of us. By all accounts, we couldn't create something brand new. That isn't how the technology works. All we could achieve at the time was minor alterations to existing viruses that could allow them to operate slightly different from their natural forms. We can make viruses a bit more infectious, more easily curable, or cause stronger existing symptoms, but trying to do all of that to one virus caused the genome to fall apart. Still, their demands persisted. Looking back now, what I was doing was deplorable. I should have walked away after I was given my orders. It would have been more moral to stay away and let the government ruin me for a breach of contract than to...
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tried to create the atrocities that I did. I knew what I was trying to create would be used on people, innocent or otherwise. It was wrong, but I was excited. In conversation, I would say I was doing my patriotic duty, acting as though I had fully bought into the post-9/11 propaganda. It was bullshit. I justified my actions by thinking my research would go a long way in genome-altering advancements. That, in a way, I was benefiting society. But I didn't care who I was working for. My dream since childhood was to change the world and have my name written down in history books for years. I knew this was my best opportunity to achieve my goals. Ironic when looking where I am now, doing something that will ensure my erasure. As month after month passed, I was sure I would be fired for not being able to achieve the DOD's goals, but the funding kept coming. Months turned into years, and as the money kept coming, the technology was getting better. It wasn't unusual to leave the lab one night, to return the next day to see brand new equipment. Technology years more advanced than what we had been using the day before. It was strange and a bit creepy, but we happily accepted. Progress was finally being made, but I wasn't there very long to see it. As I was leaving the lab one evening in the winter of 2013, I was pulled aside by the facility's project manager, Jason Michaels, and informed that due to my exemplary work ethic and output, I was being moved to a new wing of the facility to begin work on a new, more classified project. I was a bit pissed at the idea of being taken away from my work again, especially just as good progress was being made, but Jason reassured me by telling me that the work I would be doing on this new project would be of much higher importance. Looking back, I should have taken it as him telling me I would be working on something much more unethical. But that word, importance, meant everything to me. I'm sure now Jason knew that. The way he talked felt methodical and planned, as though every time he spoke it was off of a rehearsed script. "When do I start?" I asked. "Tomorrow, Dr. Hall," he answered with a small grin. "Meet me at the entrance to the east wing of the facility tomorrow morning. You'll be briefed on the project then." The east wing? The facility had recently undergone a major expansion and renovation. The east wing was a massive addition to the building. More interestingly, though, was the air of secrecy surrounding it. The facility had kept all the projects secret from one another unless there was some sort of collaboration happening. But I hadn't talked to a single person in the facility who admitted to even being inside of the East Wing. You couldn't see inside the wing either. The large sliding door into the wing required a special keycard to open, a keycard it seemed no one had. Knowing that I may be one of the first was an honor. It was a grueling night. My mind raced with the possibilities of what this new project might be. I tossed and turned like a child on Christmas Eve, dreaming of his presence under the tree. My mind wandered to my parents. What would they think of me? Would they be proud? They told me to make a name for myself. They supported me during college. For a moment, my imagination became negative. I'm in the right, aren't I? I couldn't ask them now, though. Even if they were alive, I was sworn to secrecy. Still, the thought to how they would react filled my mind as I slowly drifted to sleep. I woke up early the next morning to ensure I didn't leave the facility project manager waiting for me. I sat in the main hallway of the facility, in front of the locked doors to the east wing. The doors standing before me were like the entrance to the Holy Land. I sat on a bench beside the doors, waiting for Jason to arrive. "Excuse me, are you here about the East Wing project too?" I looked up to see a man, no older than 30, looking down at me. Yes, I replied. "Hi, sorry," the man spoke, holding out his hand. "I'm Dr. Dustin Hood. I'm also on this project." "Dr. Daniel Hall," I reached out and shook his hand. "Any idea on what we'll be working on, Dr. Hood?"
"Probably as much as you do," he replied,
sitting at the other end of the bench.
"I was just told to meet here to be briefed on some new project."
I leaned my head back and closed my eyes, tired from the restless night.
"So, what did you do before this?"
Dr. Hood asked.
"I don't think we're allowed to answer those questions," I said, looking over at him.
That's the right answer,"
Dr. Hood said with a smile and wink. "But I'm talking about before you started working with the agency. We're going to be together for the foreseeable future. Might as well get to know each other."
I stared at him for a moment. His eyes were filled with life. When working with the creation of biological weapons, my coworkers were strict and serious, as if the weight of the work that we were doing weighed on them. I tried to be open and friendly with them, but my advances were shot down. Eventually, I began to take on the callous demeanor as well. I could feel Dr. Hood's excitement cracking at my walls. I worked with the pharmaceutical company on the biological alteration of viruses, I said.
"That's interesting," Dr. Hood replied.
"What about you?" I asked. "What'd you do?"
"Research in cloning technology, specifically with livestock animals," he answered.
We stared at each other for a long moment, trying to piece together the question on both of our minds. What could the DOD have in mind to pair us together? What the hell was this project? We talked for a few more minutes. Dr. Hood and I shared many similarities. We both were passionate about our work and seeking to innovate. In our conversations, I found myself more excited to work on the new project, to work with someone I could view as a possible friend. As we waited, more people joining the project arrived at the door. The group was relatively large. I expected the team to be small like my last project, but soon, 17 people were waiting in the hallway and more joining in. As more and more of our new co-workers arrived, more questions were being raised on my mind about what we would be doing.
"Welcome, everyone!"
Jason exclaimed with a smile. Two other people walked alongside him.
This is Dr. Amanda Kim and Dr. Elliot Turner. They'll be supervising the new endeavor you all will be participating in. He moved his hands out, instructing the supervisors to begin handing out special lanyards with personalized key cards. I know you're all excited to learn about what you're going to be doing, but let's hold off until you're all inside your new personal wing. The wing looked larger on the inside than it did from the out. Room after room of equipment that looked familiar or completely unrecognizable. I knew I would be spending lots of time learning what everything was. As all of you understand, Jason explained, the Department of Defense is dedicated to exploring all avenues of scientific research in the name of military innovation. Recently, major breakthroughs have been made in the realm of genetic alteration and cloning, a field.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That all of you have some level of expertise in. Now, this technology is not open to the public yet. Currently, the United States government is the only entity that has access to this technology. Officially, we are not a division of the government, and therefore are being contracted to use this technology to run a project that is of high importance to the DoD. My heart began to race. High importance is what I've been waiting for. You are all being placed on what is referred to as the BEHC program. Dr. Kim continued for Jason. BEHC stands for Biologically Enhanced Humanoid Combatant. Our team will be working to see the extent of genetically altering the human genome with the goal of maximizing human potential for military use. You'll observe the humanoids with the genomes you alter through stages of development. Humanoid? One of the scientists in our group asked. Why not just human?
Wonderful question, Dr. Liu,
Dr. Kim replied.
While the project is completely confidential, those that approved it had some ethical concerns. So to avoid them, slight alterations to the genomes you will be working with will be made. It will operate as a pure human genome, but it isn't entirely, therefore, officially not a human. So, for ethics' sake, humanoids are what we will be referring to as the specimens as.
So, how exactly is that supposed to work?
Dr. Hood asked with his head tilted.
You mean observing the humanoids through development? Do we have surrogates on standby to carry the specimens for a time to be observed? That's where the recent breakthroughs come in, Dr. Turner chimed, leading us to a room filled with strange red rubber bags connected to tubes and wires.
See, the main issue with the cloning and genetic modifications of larger organisms is the need for a host to incubate the fetuses.
With the recent breakthroughs, we are now able to create our own artificial wombs. So when genome alterations are completed and placed into an embryo, the embryo will be put into our artificial wombs to gestate and be monitored. Besides this incubation room, there are two more down the hall. This will allow you to develop multiple batches at once.
This is incredible,
Dr. Hood whispered as he stepped towards one of the red water-filled sacks, placing his hand against it. This changes everything surrounding cloning.
It really is amazing,
Jason replied, turning to address the awe-filled room. You, All of you have been chosen to undergo this project because you are all some of the best in this field. I understand I'm asking a lot of you all, but I'm confident that everyone here are the best people in the world to go about this task. Your skills are...
I can't do this!
A voice called out. We all turned to see one of our fellow recruits standing by the door, tears in her eyes.
I'm sorry, sir. I want to help you, but this is wrong. Very wrong. I've done a lot of things for this company, but this is...
Hey! Jason interrupted her softly, putting his hands up in a defensive motion. I understand. Some people just aren't cut out for this. You could go home for the day. We can discuss more on this and where you'll go from here tomorrow. Remember the contract you signed, though. You aren't allowed to discuss confidential research, even within the agency.
Yes, sir.
She replied before quickly turning and walking out of the room. Shame, Jason whispered. His eyes seemed to stare off into the distance for a moment before robotically snapping back into his monologue. But as I was saying, your skills make me confident that the goals of the DOD can be reached. The rest of the day was spent explaining how our mission roadmap would play out. To start, we would be given human zygotes to splice in the altered genomes. At the start, it would essentially be playing with the genome, testing to see what could be changed while still keeping the embryos alive and developing. The way Jason and the supervisors talked made it seem like what we were doing was more of a trial run or proof of concept. I'm sure at the time it was. We were informed that we would only have to monitor the development of the humanoids through the early stages of development. After around 4 to 6 months of monitoring, a special team of other researchers that we didn't know would come in and replace the artificial wombs that held the specimens in them with brand new wombs to rinse and repeat the process. What they did with them after they left the facility, I still wonder about. The next few months were a grueling orientation to the new technology. Each room was filled with advanced equipment dedicated to a different part of our mission. Since the existence of the technology was top secret, our lessons on how to operate the systems and machines were taught to us by different people who had hands-on in making the equipment. While this was interesting and very eye-opening, not everyone is cut out to teach. So, I and other co-workers would find ourselves studying the equipment outside of our orientations to get a better understanding of what the hell we were being taught. Dr. Liu was a huge help to me. He was older than me by about 12 years, but his understanding of technology was incredible. It was a difficult learning experience, but by the end, the skills we had learned were incredible. Early work was slow but promising. We made sure to do different altered genome batches temporarily spaced out so that we weren't starting from scratch each time the other group of researchers came to take the specimens. While most embryos didn't develop past zygote stage once given the altered genomes, each one that did gave us a better understanding of our limitations. Even in the early stages of development, we could see signs of higher brain activity and higher muscle mass. Seeing the specimens had a greater impact on me than expected. I was never a paternal person. I never wanted children, and I had thought my view on human life was diminished after years of working on my previous project. I had been making things that would kill people in horrible ways, but I was disconnected from it. If there were people hurt by the things I created, I never saw them. It made it easier. But as I looked through the clear plastic window of the artificial wombs, I felt emotionally connected to the thing inside. We were told that they weren't pure humans, but looking at them as they developed told a different story. They looked pure. Their small, delicate bodies, a perfect representation of a developing person. Their bulbous pink veiny heads rested upon their tiny frail bodies, their only connection to the outside world being the tubes on the outside of the bag that attached to their umbilical cord, supplied the fetuses with nutrients and blood. At first, my other co-workers were annoyed by the specimens being taken from our care, but after a few years, it simply became part of the job. I was different, though. Seeing the other researchers come in and place the wombs with the specimens roughly on the carts and wheel them out of the wing filled me with a strange, sinking feeling, as though the taking of them was profoundly wrong. The thought of what might be happening to the humanoids after they left my care often made me sick. I was questioning everything I had done in my life to get to where I was.
"So where do you think they go?"
Dr. Hood asked me as he chewed his tuna fish sandwich.
"What?"
I asked, glancing up at him.
"The specimens," he added. "What do you think the other researchers do with them?"
"I don't have a clue. I don't really think about it," I said quickly, trying to avoid the conversation.
"Do you think they just terminate them?"
Dr. Hood kept prodding.
"I said I don't know, Justin. I just don't like thinking about it. Hell, I don't even know if we're allowed to have this conversation."
I seriously doubt they will fire some of their best researchers over a conversation during lunch break. Dustin laughed to himself as he took another bite.
"But what do you mean you don't like thinking about it? It bothers you?"
I don't know, I sighed. At first, I was excited, but the further we go with this, I've just started to wonder what it is that we're doing. Do you know what I mean?
"Not really," Dustin answered. "I feel like our mission's been clear since the moment we stepped into this wing."
"But it's more than that now," I interjected. "How many of these specimens have we made? Maybe 100? What do you think happens when they leave this wing? Are they terminated? What if they're being brought to term?"
"Okay, what if?"
Dustin asked, shrugging his shoulders. "They aren't considered humans, so if they are being brought to term, researchers could do whatever they want to them. Does that not freak you out?"
"You care about the specimens?"
Dustin tilted his head.
I don't know. My mind just gets a little bit cloudy after they get taken away."
"Why do you think they picked you?" Dustin asked.
"What?"
I said, confused.
"Why do you think they picked you for this project?"
"I guess it's because of the work I did on the last project."
"Besides that,"
Dustin said as he took a drink from his water bottle,
"why else would they pick you besides just your prior work?"
"I guess it's because I did what's best for the country," I answered.
"Oh my god, drop it, Daniel,"
Dustin exclaimed, rolling his eyes.
"We've worked together for 3 years. I consider you a friend. I know the patriotic angle is horseshit. You like this job, this project. You like the idea of doing something never done before, cementing yourself as one of the first, one of the greats."
I hung my head.
"I'm the same way. Everyone here is. And the agency knows that. Hell, they encourage it, is what they want. The work we're doing here will change the way the world works. Take the military humanoid shit out of it.
we are pioneering the uses of this technology. Once it gets out to the public, and it will get out to the public eventually, our research will be the backbone of human advancement. The generations after will be smarter, stronger, will be immune to diseases, will be perfect. But it starts with you, with us, with what we're doing now. Do you get that? Yes, I said under my breath. You're right. I don't know what's gotten into me. It happens to the best of us. Well, not me, though. Dustin laughed, standing to his feet and patting my shoulder. Don't let it get you down. You and I have a world to change. Work was a bit easier after that conversation. My emotions were still there, but it was like I found new dirt to bury it under. However, advancement in the research seemed to plateau shortly after. We had created a genome that appeared to be the extent of positive alteration that allowed the specimens to develop. We began to believe that the project would come to a close soon. This mindset didn't last long, however, as we were soon visited by the facility's head supervisor, Jason, once more, to give us another one of his rehearsed speeches. You have all done great things over the past few years in this field of research, Jason said, a toothy smile plastered across his face. But like all things with science and technology, as innovations are made, the range of possibilities broaden. Recent advancements have become stable enough to be used in this project. The main prerogative will remain the same, but the tools at your disposal will allow for greater advancement and genome alteration. You all have pushed the human genome to a point that many would consider perfection. I have asked you to perfect God's image, and you have done that. Now I ask that you step beyond it, to create something new using the genome you have all created, something beyond human, beyond anything the world has seen. I understand I am asking a lot of you all, but this team gives me confidence that what we are asking can be done. You will be given the next week off while the new equipment is brought into the wing. A new orientation will begin at the start of the week after. I look forward to witnessing the wonders you people will create. As we left the facility, the wing was filled with whispers of all different kinds of emotions. Some people spoke with enthusiasm, excited by the prospect of further research, while others sounded somber, nervous at the idea of what was to come. Many people like me, however, kept to themselves, still processing the information given to us. The week for me was a difficult one. I felt conflicted over the prospect of what we would be doing. Justin and I went out to a local bar a few nights that week. It was one of the few things to do in this small town, and the drinks made dealing with my feelings easier. We weren't able to discuss the project outside of the East Wing, but Dustin mentioned many times how excited he was to get back to work. I didn't tell him how I felt. Part of me wanted to call Jason and tell him I wasn't coming back, that I was starting to find the project too immoral and couldn't continue. But I didn't. I thought long and hard about that week, about why I didn't walk away. Maybe it was because I was afraid of starting over again. Maybe I was scared of letting the rest of the team down. Maybe deep down, past all the conflicting emotions, I still truly enjoyed my work. I can't say the answer for sure anymore. Perhaps all my excuses are correct. Maybe none of them. But that isn't what's important anymore. What's important is that I did stay. Despite Jason's bolstering, the new equipment we got seemed to exceed everyone's expectations. It's a complicated topic as to how the technology works, but I'll do my best to keep the explanation simple. All living things share common ancestors through evolution. The closer the two species, the more recent a shared common ancestor existed. These links can be seen through our DNA. That's why we say that we share 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees. It's because we have a relatively recent common ancestor. What the new technology allowed us to do was find common ancestral links between two different species' genomes and build an entirely different genome that specifies features from both species together. This could even be done with multiple species genomes at the same time. This allows for near endless possibilities of new hybrid species to be created. While that advancement alone opened the door to countless research possibilities, another breakthrough with cloning technology was paired with it. A new version of artificial wombs were given to us. Each one is much larger this time, stretching to about 4 feet in length. These new wombs were fitted with a new nutrients delivery system through the umbilical cords. This new system provides the specimens with the stimulant and proteins that boost the cell development and function, allowing the humanoids to develop at a faster rate. Finally, we were given a more advanced genome sequencing algorithm. This algorithm allowed us to better predict any unforeseen consequences of our genome alteration. The algorithm could also learn with us in terms of what worked and what didn't, which meant the more genomes we tested out, the better the algorithm could predict. With the new equipment explained to us, we were given the assignment that would consume our lives for the next few years. Create a humanoid hybrid that could be used for military purposes and be produced quickly through rapid development. While the team dealt with pressure when we were altering just the human genome, this time around the pressure to have results was much more intense. Due to the larger size of the artificial wombs, we didn't have as many this time. Because of this, we weren't able to have as many embryos developing at once. This meant that we needed to be confident that the altered genomes we were making wouldn't simply stop the embryos from developing. We were visited by the team that collected the specimens much more frequently than before. I guess that made sense due to the fact that the humanoids we're exposing were developing faster now. Rather than coming in every 5 or 6 months, now we were visited every 2. Despite the added pressure, research at the start was not promising. Our initial plan was relatively simple. Create a hybrid between human and chimpanzee that had the cognitive ability of a human, but with the muscle mass type of a chimpanzee. With the new algorithm, it seemed like it should have been simple and a good way to get used to the new equipment. But the results were lousy. At first, none of the zygotes took to the new genome, but after they did, the results were often catastrophic. I still remember the first one that I saw. I'd come into the wing one morning and was immediately accosted by Justin.
"We have a problem,"
Dustin said with a disturbed look on his face.
"What happened?" I asked.
"It's the batch of embryos from 2 weeks ago. Something went wrong,"
Dustin answered.
What? What happened?"
You're gonna have to see it."
I don't know what I expected to see. Even if I did, I don't know if it could have prepared me. It was a batch of 4 embryos, or at least they should have been embryos. They had only been gestating for 2 weeks, but overnight, they seemed to have grown to a stage that more resembles a second trimester fetus. The fetus's arms and jaw structures resembled that of a chimpanzee. However, that was expected. Hell, it was what we were trying to achieve. What we weren't trying to achieve were the dozens of fingers that protruded all over the humanoid's body.
The thing's grotesque, unnatural appendages seemed to curl and writhe in the water of the womb. All of them had similar conditions and had died at some point during the night, most likely due to the accelerated growth. I stumbled back away from the wombs, appalled by what I had witnessed inside. I mean... I stumbled over my words.
What did the supervisor say?
They made a few calls, Dustin whispered. The team that comes in and takes the specimens will be coming here today to remove them. It's weird, though. The supervisors seem happy about the results, talking about progress.
I suppose in the grand scheme of the research it was. We now had greater evidence that rapid development in the hybrid species was possible. Progress was being made. So we kept going. But that first batch had always stuck with me. A horrific teaser of what was to come. Soon, we had stable base perimeters for both genome alteration and rapid development. We could have specimens develop in 2 months that would have taken a normal human fetus 6. And that was on top of the different hybrids being worked on. We had special designs finding the best traits of the animal kingdom that would be beneficial to the project. Years passed and everything was going well. But as progress was made, the work environment began to change. People began to become reserved and standoffish to their fellow researchers. Dustin and I questioned what could be happening, but we found out soon enough. One of my fellow researchers, Dr. Matthews, came to me and told me he saw Dustin tampering with one of the files for the artificial womb nutrient systems. He said Dustin acted nervous and was dodging questions when asked about what he was doing. I told Dr. Matthews I would handle it. I went and found Dustin and pulled him aside.
"Hey, is everything all right?" I asked.
"Yeah, everything's perfect,"
he answered in his chipper voice.
"Look, I'm not trying to step on any toes, but Dr. Matthews said he saw you acting strange on one of the computers."
"Oh," he paused.
"I was just making sure the settings were all up to date."
Dustin had been a good friend of mine for years. I could tell when he was lying.
"Dustin," I whispered, "what are you doing on that computer?"
"I don't know," he said quietly.
"You don't know? What the hell do you mean you don't know?"
"I mean, I can't say, Daniel."
I could see a look in Dustin's eyes now. He was nervous. I was pulled aside and told to do something to the nutrient system, but they made it abundantly clear that no one is allowed to know what I did.
"What?"
I was stunned. "Why would they tell you to keep quiet about that? The nutrient system is super touchy when it comes to developing each specific hybrid."
"That's the thing," he whispered. "I was given a code to get into this specific project folder. The file wasn't for a genome I've seen before. I think it's some project that only a few people are working on in the background. Thing is, I was only working on a tiny part of it. I'm clueless as to what the hell they were trying to make. It's like some Manhattan Project shit."
Communication is incredibly important, especially on a project as delicate as this. What was the DOD thinking? Surely, they couldn't know how to do our jobs better than us. Hell, the whole reason we were brought on was because we were the best of the best.
"Damn," I said under my breath.
"What are we doing anymore, Dustin?"
"I don't know."
Dustin's voice was low and filled with indecisiveness. "I don't like this. I don't think this is a good fit for me anymore," I said. "I'm starting to think it's time to step away. Go to work somewhere far away from the government. You should too."
We can't.
Dustin's voice was stern.
What are you talking about? What do you mean we can't? I asked. Don't you tell me you're still holding on to that greatness stuff.
No, Daniel. I mean we aren't allowed to quit.
What?
What makes you think that?
Emma?
He whispered.
Emma? I replied. Who's Emma?
Dr. Emma Kennedy. Do you remember her crying a few weeks ago?
Oh yeah, something about her dog dying?
Bullshit. She doesn't even have a dog. Me and her have been, you know, seeing each other outside of work.
I thought we weren't allowed to have relationships with...
Yeah, I know. Dustin interrupted. That's not the point. She told me that she wasn't comfortable with the project anymore. That she wanted out. I told her to do what she thought was right. So, the next day, she tells Dr. Kim that she wants to quit. Dr. Kim sets up a meeting with Jason. I watch her go into that private meeting room with them. 30 minutes later, she walks out white as a ghost with tears streaming down her cheeks. She goes right back to work, talking about some dog that never existed.
Holy shit. Did you talk to her? What did she say?
She looked at me like I was a walking biohazard, Dustin replied. She told me that we were a mistake, and that she didn't want to see me outside of work ever again.
You think they threatened her?
Probably. Listen, I've already said too much. Don't say anything to anyone, okay? Dustin pleaded. They'll get you to work on part of the secret stuff soon. Everyone will eventually. Then you'll understand. Once we get it done, we'll be free.
Yeah.
No one will know.
Secrecy grew over the next few months. It was no longer just whatever the secret genome project was. Now every single hybrid was shrouded in secrecy. Each time we came into work, we were individually pulled aside and told what we would and wouldn't be working on, and how we were only allowed to interact with select people throughout the day. Knowing that I couldn't escape the horror show that I was working on filled me with dread. Walking into the facility went from feeling like stepping into the future to feeling like stepping into a prison. I regretted my path, but it felt like the only option I could take. I signed away my life and became a monster for these people, and now I had no other choice but to make more.